Live from London, the Paris of England, it's the Penny Dreadfuls, brought to you by the Orphans for Cholera Awareness Foundation.
It's in the water.
This is the Brothers Faversham. It is no secret that historians rarely agree on anything. If they did, we would only have one book on Hitler rather than about a billion. But the one thing they come close to agreeing on is that one cannot speak of the Victorian era without mentioning the Faversham family. Sir Digby Faversham, a son of minor Kent gentry, had captured a French eagle at Waterloo, invested wisely in forks, and bagged an absolute mega hottie in the form of his wife, Lady Alexandra, Great Britain's foremost secret agent. Tonight's programme concerns Digby and Lady Alexandra's sixth son, Maximilian Mortimer Caramack Faversham, Victorian Britain's greatest horror writer. His was a difficult birth. In the winter of 1846, his heavily pregnant mother, engaged in one of her regular missions on behalf of the crown, was captured by the evil Count Vladimir Traevsky. Baby Max was born in a Siberian jail, and it was to have a lasting effect upon him, as Father Digby would discover as he rushed to be by his recovering wife's side in the British consulate in Murmansk on the very night of her rescue.
Minister, is she all right?
She'll live, Sir Digby. The doctors are seeing her now, but she's been through a lot. It seems Count Traevsky treated her very brutally.
Brutally?
Dead legs, Chinese burns. You name it. He's had her locked away in the dark ever since we lost contact 7 months ago. Her eyes are only now readjusting to the light.
I want to see her.
Of course. We've had the windows blocked up to minimize her discomfort, so mind you don't walk into anything. Health and safety are having kittens.
And my son?
I don't think he's had any kittens, I've...
No. How is he?
You must consider...
Were there any complications, Minister?
Your son is... alive, Sir Digby. That's all that matters. You may go in now.
Digby, is that you?
Yes, I'm here, dear.
Darling, I'd like you to meet your son.
Oh, dear God!
No, Digby, that's my hot water bottle.
Oh, thank God.
This is your son.
Oh, dear God!
What Sir Digby saw, looming out of the gloom, chilled him to the core. His newborn son was pale white to the point of near transparency, his body a tapestry of probing veins and milky skin. For the rest of Max's life, the touch of the sun's soft rays burned him, his delicate eyes and fragile fair hair giving him equally no protection from the light. He could not run and play with his siblings unless draped in a protective cowl, like some horrendous sandpit wraith. But despite this solitary existence, Max was not without companionship. For, as the sun set each day, he would wander down to the ivy-covered churchyard beyond the garden wall, where his best and only friend, Edward, would be waiting.
Max! I bopped an owl on the head! Come see!
Is it dead?
No, it's just stunned! Look at its eyes! They've been nesting in the belfry! Dad says they're a right pest. Dad wants us to get rid of them all.
Us? You mean both of us?
Aye, isn't it awesome? I love chores, me. Come on, let's find you another net.
Oh, and half a brick.
Edward was the son of the Reverend Peter Barrowman, whose parish lay just beyond the Faversham's estate. Max loved spending time with the brave and simple boy, who took such great pleasure in the outdoors, and, in his turn, Edward loved the fantastical stories that sprang so readily to Max's mind in their games of make-believe.
Quickly, Captain Edward! We must excavate quicker! The evil mole men are right on our tails!
You're right, Professor Max! All power to the forward drills!
How far down are we now?
About 6 feet.
Father, we must go, Father!
We should probably stop, actually. Dad hates it when the graves are deeper than this. We've only got a short rope for lowering them in, you see.
Oh, all right.
Edward, Dad says he'll be out in a bit to see how you're getting on. Hello, Max.
Hello, Ivy.
I like your grave. It looks very... rectangular.
Thanks. What's in the bag?
Owls. I'm going to set them free into the river. Do you want to help me?
Wow, yeah, I'd love to.
Well, I'll see you down there in a bit then.
Yeah, see you down there in a bit then.
Oh, my God, I can't believe it!
What?
You fancy me sister!
No, I don't!
Yes, you do! You want to hold her hand and kiss her on the face!
Well, so what?
Max fancies Ivy! Oh. Max fancies
Shut
Ivy!
Up. Shut up!
What's going on here? No horseplay, I hope?
No, Dad, we've just finished the digging!
Good, good. You've done an excellent job. Well, it's getting late. Come on, Edward. I think it's time we called it a night. Will we see you tomorrow?
Oh, yes, Father Marriman. As soon as the sun goes down.
Good night, then. Come in when you're ready, Edward.
Good night. Your dad is ace.
I know. I'm going to be a vicar too when I'm older.
Really?
Yeah. I'll be in charge here one day. Why don't you join the clergy too? We could be Blood of Christ brothers.
Oh. I don't know. Do you think I could?
Well, me dad's enrolled me at the Vicar Academy already. I'm starting in September. I'm sure he could get you in too if you wanted.
Maybe. Well, I'll see you tomorrow, Edward.
Oh, I see. Going down to the river to do some kissy face, eh? Like this.
Shut up.
See you tomorrow.
Max wandered down to the riverbank where the expectant Ivy was waiting. And there, tentatively taking each other's hands, they made kissy face. Max wandered home full of the joys and immediately inquired with his parents about enrolling in reverend school, believing it would impress Ivy, what with all the men in her life thus far being vicars. In early September, the day before he and Edward were due to start their new school, the boys were taken to London to get their school supplies. Cassocks, cauldrons, magic wands, that sort of thing. Returning home tired and elated that evening, there seemed to be time for one last boyhood adventure.
Max, slow down! Where are we going?
I found something in the thicket beyond the graveyard. You've got to come and see.
Look! What is it?
It's an old well. It's been boarded up for years, but I think it might be the answer to your dad's owl problem.
You mean that's where the nest is?
Exactly. And in the nest is the queen owl! It's got to be! That's why they keep coming back. We only ever catch the worker owls.
A queen owl! Of course! Brilliant! Right, how big is it?
Oh, it could be as large as a small house or as small as a large bungalow.
Crikey! What if it's hungry?
Oh, it won't be hungry because the worker owls will probably have been feeding it.
Right, grab me legs. I'm going to peek through the cracks and see if I can see it. Have you got me?
I've got you. Can you see anything?
Not really. Maybe if I put all of me weight on this really rotten piece of...
Max would in time remember precious little of the rescue attempt. The frantic sprint back to the church, the fetching of unfortunately short ropes and so on. But it was, tragically, all to no avail. Edward's funeral was held the following weekend, at which Max sat bewildered and bereft, unable to meet the gaze of all those pitying faces. Ivy had sought to assuage his sense of guilt.
It's not your fault, Max. Nobody blames you. It was an accident.
But in his state, Max could only hear recrimination.
It is your fault, Max. Everyone blames you. Your mum says you were an accident.
Poor Max spent the service staring at a crack in the floor. Occasionally, his eyes would flit from Ivy to Father Barrowman beside her, who was himself too distraught to conduct the ceremony, and finally to the 4-foot coffin set out before the congregation. My God, isn't this terribly depressing for a comedy show? Find out after these messages.
Do you like cheese? Do you like eating cheese before bed but are plagued by those pesky nightmares? Then why not try Potts' caffeinated cheese? Now you can eat cheese all night long without falling asleep ever again. Just listen to this happy customer!
Kill me!
Potts' caffeinated cheese! You know it makes sense!
Max never found the words to speak to Ivy, and so it came as a relief to move away from home and all its painful memories, and into the cold embrace of St. Benefer's boarding school for vicars. But the pain sat heavy upon him, and the stress exacerbated his intolerance to sunlight. His fellow students found him distant and somber, and Max struggled to make new friends in the boisterous environment of a Vicar Academy Freshers' Week.
A fairly standard gap year, actually. I worked at a shop on the high street, then 6 months in Thailand branding heretics. How about you? Max, isn't it?
I can't really go in the sun, so I stayed here in England, in a cellar.
Oh my God.
Lady Day!
No,
Lady
guys, Day! No!
You know the rules, mate.
What am I like?
Chug, 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 chug! Damn you, clergy warrior! Hey!
I've seen you about campus. You're always working alone.
Alone?
Have you met Pekorsky? He's dead friendly. I think he's in the same dorm room as my lab partner. Have you met him? The Reverend Phil Downerwell?
Phil Downerwell.
The pain of Edward's death was never far away. And before Max could control himself, it burst out of him in a tide of socially retarded rage.
Anyway, we're all going over to the Dean's house later on to skinny dip in his bird bath. You should come along.
What? So you can all laugh at my stupid pale body because you think I'm a murderer? Well, excuse me if I don't jump at the chance.
Hey, come on, Max. Nobody's laughing
at you. Just leave me alone! Your idiotic jollity is a stain upon your characters. How can you sit there drinking and laughing like braying drones when all we are destined for is the grave? I will take no part in this!
So, we still go to the Dean's house or what, for Christ's sake?
Name in vain!
Oh my God!
Chug, 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 chug!
Max fled to his room, tears of anger and anguish trickling side by side down his cheeks, where he grabbed the nearest book to hand and started scrawling dark, angry words in the margin. Scribbling furiously for hours, Max finally collapsed, spent and alone. When he awoke, he had, clasped in his hands, the sinister tale of the voice in the darkness, a chilling piece of horror fiction, which he reread with undisguised delight.
Saunderson allowed himself a wry smile. Was he not a man of science? Yes, he was. Surely the voice that had called out to him had been some trick of the light. And suddenly it cried out to him once more, Alan, it's me, your father. You look great. Have you been working out? It was not only inappropriate, but terrifying!
When he had finished, he took out a pen and began to write anew. He scrawled furiously every night after lights out, with only the pale glow of the moon for illumination. Every tale sinister, twisted and frightful. But he never shared his creations, choosing rather to spirit them away from prying eyes. That was until one morning Max was paid a visit by the Archbishop.
Good morning, Max.
Archbishop!
I've found something that belongs to you, Max. Between you and me, it's not something I'd leave lying about.
I promise you, Your Grace, it's the cat that brings them in.
I meant this.
My Bible. Where did you find it?
Well, my child, you left it in the refectory.
Well, thank you for bringing it back, Your Grace.
It was slightly more than the least I could do. In fact, it was very useful. I needed to check a quote for my new sermon. Cake, Satan's silent killer. But I turned to Revelations. Revelations indeed did I find.
Oh.
The boy with the see-through face?
Yes, I can explain.
And then in Leviticus?
The eagle swoops.
And plucks out the eyes of a girl, yes.
Please, Your Grace, I'm sorry.
Sorry? Sorry! This is brilliant!
What?
It's the best horror fiction I've read ever! You've got talent there, my boy. Real bona fide talent. And I should know, I used to be a writer before I got into all this.
Really?
Oh, yes. Did you ever read a little Christmas chiller entitled The Macabre Affair That Took Place at Christmas?
Your Archbishop?
At yourself. With my help, you could go far.
And go far he did. With the Archbishop's contacts, Max was soon able to secure a publisher for his first slim volume of ghoulish short stories. All were so spectacularly successful that His Grace and Max both left the church to work on the books full-time. Max writing, the Archbishop managing this newfound career, and arranging many promotional book readings at which Max would meet his adoring public.
Upon the plaque was carved his name. No wonder no one would talk to him. He hadn't been unconscious for 10 minutes. Turned out he'd been dead all along.
Thank you, Max, for reading us that passage from your latest novel, The House That Was a Scary House. I think we can all agree it sounds truly terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
I was dead all along. I didn't see that coming.
Max Faversham will now take a few questions. Yes, you there with a cape holding a silver goblet. Nope, that one, you.
Greetings.
Celestial felicitations.
My question is this. Do you believe in the existence of ghosts, and have you experienced them personally?
I have indeed. I hold dark compacts with them most evenings.
Steady on, Max.
It's all right, I know what I'm doing. I am well known to the nether spirits, and shall be chronicling my adventures in my next volume of Forbidden Lore. Max Faversham, Demon Puncher!
Seriously, it was dead all along. I'm still reeling from that moment.
I think that's about enough for now. If you could all form an orderly queue, Max will sign your books for you.
Name?
Osiris Pugsley.
How is that spelt?
No, I'm not here for a book.
The t-shirt are at the other store.
You misunderstand. I'm in dire need of your assistance. My great aunt complains of noises in the night, of howls and apparitions. She cannot sleep, Mr. Faversham.
Mr. Pugsley,
Your books tell of things that cannot be simple fictions. Nobody could have made up all that stuff about him being dead all along. If you have any power over these dark forces, then you must help me.
How?
With an exorcism!
An exorcism?
Help him, Master.
I'll do it.
Max, I'm not sure this is a good idea.
Look, I've got it under control.
Max swept from the building with fans in tow, flocking like angsty suckling lambs to the gloom teat. Before they got 50 yards, however, Max came face to face with a face he hadn't faced for years.
Max!
Ivy, is it really you? Oh, my God, you've all grown up.
It was Ivy, his childhood sweetheart from earlier. Do you remember?
I was late. Well, I'm so glad I caught you. It's good to see you, Max.
You too. It's been a long time.
Well, I always hoped you'd come back and visit.
I wanted to, Ivy. I just always thought...
Listen, Max, I was wondering... I'm only in London for the day, and I don't know if you'd fancy it, but I'm heading over to the Natural History Museum to check out the new Puffin exhibition. It's supposed to be banging.
Ivy, I kind of need to... I mean, it'd be great to catch up and everything, but I sort of
It's okay. I understand. You've got a new life now.
Ivy, I'm sorry, I...
But she was gone. Presumably to that puffin exhibition. Would the exorcism make up for Max missing out on all those puffins? Find out after these messages.
Do you have problems with emotional intimacy? Would you like to relax into the warm embrace of another human being, but are afraid they think you're a repulsive, boring loser? Then worry no longer! All of your problems can be overcome with the simple application of cats! Cats, the crutch of emotional cripples! Sound too good to be true? Just listen to this pathetic customer!
I couldn't be happy! happy with my new cat. He's not interested in me at all, just like a man. But he always lets me buy him dinner.
Good grief! I wouldn't touch her with yours. But this hairy little munchkin might. Cats, the unfriendly dog.
I don't need to go outside. I've got a cat.
Cats are non-refundable. We accept no responsibility if cat doesn't like you.
I've got a cat.
Arriving at Pugsley's house, Max was struck by his own rashness. What had he got himself into? With an army of fans outside and Pugsley's shining face before him, his only hope was to, you know, just sort of bluff it.
Is everything all right, Mr. Faversham?
Yes, I'm just saying a preparatory prayer. Oh, God. Amen.
Auntie Battle, I've brought the exorcist.
Righto, I'll strip to the waist.
No, that won't be necessary, thank you. But I'll need a cross, some hot water and fresh towels.
Right you are, Reverend.
Now, I understand you have ethereal intruders' burial.
Yes, enormous babies made of knives, with wings for eyes.
Oh, this is more serious than I thought.
That you are, Reverend. I'll strip to the waist.
No. Wait. They are here. Beryl, call out to them.
Now look here, Mr. Ghost.
It's moving upwards quick, Mr. Pugsley. Throw the towel over her head.
Righto.
And now the water.
I'm soaked. I better strip to the waist.
No! Hand me that cross. Oh, vile creatures of the nether realm, I entreat you to get off out of it. Go on!
I feel a slight concussion coming on.
That's completely normal, Beryl. The spirits are leaving you now. And so Max Faversham must away.
Well, thank you, Mr. Faversham. How can we ever repay you?
Max Faversham asks for nothing in return except £40 cash.
Beryl and Pugsley were hugely grateful for Max's services. Whether there were ghosts in that room, or merely the delusions of a nudity-obsessed old woman, it is unclear to the impartial observer. But regardless, they never returned. Soon, Max was inundated with similar requests, increasingly finding himself in the drawing rooms of fashionable London. Max's success continued unabated, but he was fast becoming a truly arrogant and self-important man. Shutting his ears to all those around him, he would listen almost exclusively to his internal monologue as it droned on in that stupid voice of his. A fact that was beginning to test the patience of the Archbishop.
Ah, I'm glad I caught you, Max. When are you going to have the new manuscript ready for the publishers? They're breathing down my neck as it is.
Tell them to cram it! Max Faversham is not hurried by anyone! Now is that all?
That is one thing.
Speak, old man!
Well, Trappington Huge from the Times has been asking for an interview for some time now, and I really think it would help with sales.
Maximilian Faversham does not grant interviews. He is a unique and solitary figure of darkness. A silhouette against the gaudy facile light of the popular press. Tell this petty pen pusher to communicate his questions to me telepathically.
I doubt they'll agree to that.
Well, make them bloody agree to it, you imbecile!
Wait, that is enough! I've had enough of this cheek from you, boy. I gave you a chance and you've turned yourself into a monster!
Oh, right! Well, if it wasn't for me, you'd still be nothing more than a crummy old Archbishop of York, you senile old git!
Hey! There's only one man I'll let talk to me like that. He was my friend. And he died almost 2,000 years ago.
Jesus.
Yes. And I don't think he'd approve of your behaviour, young man.
Ha! He holds no power over me anymore.
Your overconfidence is your weakness.
Your faith in your friend is yours.
That's it. I'm leaving. You used to be all about the stories. But now you're just a sellout like Poe and M.R. James and the rest of those pop-lit jerks. Take care of yourself, Max. Nobody else will.
Max was now Britain's most published author, with 7 novels owned for every man, woman and child in Britain. And his works translated into hundreds of languages, including American. But he had looked the gift horse in the mouth and kicked it in the knackers, spurning the fellowship of others at every juncture, and now wandered the empty halls of his mansion house alone. That evening, Max crawled into bed and lay staring at the ceiling, chewing on a choice chunk of Potts caffeinated cheese.
You know, spirit friends, Max Feversham always knew Max Feversham was special. Some would question why you've chosen to give such powers only to them, but Max Feversham understands. Max Feversham is a true genius, an exceptional human being. Bloody hell, this cheese is a bit rich. What's that, spirits? Yes, Max Feversham does deserve the finer things in life. After all, he is capable of anything. Why, Max Feversham could even summon a demon at his very leisure. Yes, with a simple click of the fingers.
Max!
Oh, Saberg Beast!
Max!
I am Max Feversham!
You are the speaker of falsehood, the one they call Max. He who claims to speak with the dead.
Oh, God, don't kill me!
Bloody hell, I can't keep that up. I'll read Max. It's me, Edward, back from the deed. Not very nice, is it, being tricked like that?
What? Edward, no, it can't be. Max Feversham commands you to return to the pit from whence you came!
Oh, give it a rest, man. You sound like a knob. I've come to tell you something. Something you should have been told a long while back.
Oh?
I shouldn't have been playing around on that crumbling and also treacherous well in the first place. It was never your fault, mate.
It wasn't?
No. Owls have to be stopped. It's as simple as that. We've all got sacrifices to make in life. And I think one death is a small price to pay to avoid a world run by owls. Anyway, we all make our own decisions. I decided I should climb on that rotten piece of wood, not you.
Oh.
Now, who's up for a spectral journey through why your life is so obviously shit?
Max awoke the following day, the years of guilt and loneliness simply lifted from him. He bounced down the stairs and out into the streets, where the morning sun was beginning to rise. And as its amber rays touched his skin for the first time in years, he smiled and turned to face them. A brief rail journey later, Max found himself back at a familiar door.
Max!
Hello, Ivy. Any chance of a cup of tea?
Of course. Come in.
Oh, and do you have any aftersun?
Let us leave Maximilian Faversham there in the warm company of his sweetheart Ivy Barrowman and have no more words spoken of death and the end of things. After all, it would be something of a downer to mention that some 12 years later, after breaking his ankle on a slippery rock, Max was eaten alive by ravens. Yes, let's not mention that.
Brothers Faversham was written and performed by Humphrey Carr, David Reed and Tom Tuck. It also starred me, Ingrid Oliver, and the narrator was Miles Jupp. The script editor was Richard Turner and the producer was Julia McKenzie.